Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're talking to a garlic researcher and cardiologist, Dr. Matthew Budoff. He is a physician at the UCLA Medical Center, and he is an expert on cardiovascular imaging, and he's combined his research talents with an interest in natural prevention of cardiovascular disease to come up with some really interesting research that suggests that aged garlic extract is both beneficial for slowing atherosclerosis and reversing the early stages of heart disease. You can find out more about that if you listen to part one of our podcast. Dr. Budoff, you know, the benefits of aged garlic extract seem to extend beyond cardiovascular prevention. Are you familiar with some of the research on cancer, on immunity? I know that that's not in your wheelhouse, but I think you probably have some general knowledge about garlic's properties.
No, absolutely. I mean, there's been some nice studies of epidemiologic studies showing that people who live in high garlic regions have less cancers, and there's been some randomized trials showing some potential benefit in cancer prevention. Certainly, immunity has been one of the interesting ones. It's hard to, I think it's a very hard field to study because there's so many different factors that go into, you know, getting sick or getting well. But there's definitely been quite a bit of research and interest in garlic's ability to improve the immunity. And we covered both of those topics at our garlic symposium this past year.
Right. So the issue being is that there seems to be garlic has an impact on the protective white blood cells of the immune system, in particular natural killer cells. It seems to stimulate them to proliferate and be more active and to perform better surveillance. That's my understanding, anyway.
Yes. That's been the primary mechanism that's been purported for garlic.
Right. To your knowledge, is there any clinical research that demonstrates that people who take garlic are more free of, say, respiratory infections or ward off infection in general?
There's definitely been some research in that regard. Again, I think it's hard just because it's multifactorial. Who gets a cold? Who gets a? But there have been studies in less, you know, looking at garlic versus placebo, showing less common colds, less respiratory infections. So I think there's a wide variety of studies that have supported the garlic algorithm for improving immunity.
Yeah, I've heard it said by some people who are experts on garlic who say that in order to get the blood pressure lowering effects of garlic, I mean, I think chiolic aged garlic extract capsules might provide a little bit of blood pressure lowering effects, maybe a couple of points. But if you really want to get that blood lowering effect, you have to consume lots of raw garlic. You have to put in an entire garlic bulb into these little garlic cookers that they have and pop it in the oven and then just eat clove after clove of garlic to get a significant reduction in blood pressure. Do you have any sense of the dosage of dietary garlic that would be entailed to get blood pressure down?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think it's it's definitely a dose dependent process, and I think you have to eat a lot. I'm not sure exactly where the line is drawn, but yeah, I think you have to consume quite a bit to get a significant blood pressure reduction.
But you might become a social pariah in the process.
You will definitely not be popular with your spouse and friends who have to sit next to you.
Well, then I think you would then lose the benefits of social affiliation that seems to extend people's lives. So maybe there's a trade-off there. Your blood pressure would be lower, but you'd become an isolated, lonely, embittered individual.
That's right.
And that might not be good. So, you know, I guess what this is suggesting from your research is that merely by taking, and this is kind of surprising, is you can sort of boil down the essence of garlic into this encapsulated formula and get enough significant benefit from a manageable intake that is not going to give you bad breath and it's not going to exude from your skin when you take as few as four capsules a day of a standard chiolic formula.
Right. Yeah, I think that's true.
So when the trend in nutraceutical research these days is, I mean, in the old days, they used to say, you know, drink green tea, it's healthy. Then they said, well, you know, we discovered something in green tea that's really the business end of green tea. It's the EGCG. And then they measure it and they can standardize it. They can tell you this is product is, you know, 70% EGCG or 90% EGCG. And they can tell you actually by weight how much of this active compound you're getting. Is there something comparable in the garlic world that there's standardized garlic where you actually know what your the business end of what your what the desirable molecule is?
Well, I think that goes back to the, you know, your earlier point that there's some controversy with between allicin and other agents for aged garlic extract. They feel that the S allele cysteine or SAC is the business end of their product, and that that you can get a certain amount of that, and that that is going to reflect on the potential benefit of of that dose, but then obviously there's the groups that that purport that allicin is the active component, and you know the more allicin you get, the better your benefit would be. So I think there's still some problems there as far as looking towards getting an exact answer on which of the agents is the most most active and important.
Do people get into fisticuffs at the garlic conference about, you know, the allicin proponents versus the S allyl cysteine proponents? And
it was quite civil, but there's definitely
okay
going on still.
Okay, so there's not no duels, no sword fights.
Oh, no.
Okay, no. Okay, so the other thing is this stuff is produced in Japan, correct?
Well, they actually make a lot of it in California.
Oh, they do? Okay. No, because I lately, you know,
California.
Yeah, lately I'm getting a lot of calls from listeners who they talk about certain products that are made in Japan, certain probiotic products, for example. Several companies that we import supplements from Japan are thought to be tainted with this Fukushima radiation problem. Can you speak to that issue? Because I mean, you actually sort of relieved our concern because it's made in the United States.
Yeah. No, all of the product that's sold here is made here. They have a big plant in Riverside. They grow it here, they process it here, and then they package it here. So all of the product that you would have access to is U.S. made.
Yeah. So it. We can reassure our listeners. I have to say, though, that the Japanese, I think, are very scrupulous about safety, in spite of the fact that there was this horrible disaster. And I think that there's little concern with products that are imported from Japan. But in any case, this product is made in the good old USA, the products that go to the U.S. consumers. Just coming back to you, you know, I want to pick your brain a little bit about EBT heart scanning and imaging for cardiovascular disease. You know, the way that I think a lot of people think that this should be used is, you know, you see people and they have high cholesterol and they have risk factors, but a lot of people are A, reluctant to take statin drugs, or B, it might be a waste of time for them to take statin drugs because if you have virtually zero plaque, you know, the efficacy of statins, it's a little bit like if you're sitting in the garage, you know, cleaning out your, you're cleaning your upholstery in your car, you don't need to put your seatbelts on. So do you like this test? Is it sort of a general screening test for people to decide?
It's very simple. It's, you know, it's a couple minutes. There's no dye. There's no injections. You know, you lay down on the table, get a few images taken, and then you get up and you're done. It does look directly into the plaque and the coronaries, so it tells you how your coronaries are doing directly. And again, as you said, if your coronaries are clean, probably, you know, little to no benefit of being on drugs like statins or other more potent agents that we use to fight heart disease.
So should everybody get this test, or should people at a certain age get this test, or people who have certain risk?
You know, we have the age of atherosclerosis, you know, as men turn 45, as women turn 50, we're more prone to atherosclerosis.
Right.
And then obviously with risk factors, you can enhance that as well.
Right. You know, so perhaps somebody with diabetes and hypertension, they might get the test earlier.
exactly.
Okay, or sky-high cholesterol, which, you know, I got to say that I sometimes see some really paradoxical things. I see people with really sky-high cholesterol. Usually the HDL is pretty high, too, although sometimes we see an HDL that's, you know, not even that great. You know, somebody with a cholesterol of, like, you know, 285 with an HDL that's 50, and we think, well, maybe that's not so good, and then they turn out to have zero plaque, so there are some surprises. And vice versa, some people who don't have such high cholesterol, but they have a lot of plaque.
Yeah, no, I think cholesterol is a good treatment target, but it's not the best predictor of who's going to get heart disease.
Right.
Patients don't understand that well enough, so they think if their cholesterol's low, they can't have heart problems.
Right.
But all the other risk factors, genetics and hypertension and, you know, smoking and all the other risk factors that you can get, you know, could definitely cause problems independent of your cholesterol values.
So in your clinical practice, and I think you probably screen a lot of people down in the Los Angeles area at the Harbor UCLA Medical Center in Torrance, California, when you find that someone has some plaque, let's say, or even in the case of no plaque, is it like the DEXA bone densitometry where women go check in every couple of years to see how they're doing? Or do you just suggest the test once, you know, to establish risk and then infrequently thereafter?
Yeah, I think it's mostly once and then infrequently thereafter. There are groups that I would maybe bring them back a little bit sooner just to see what's going on with their changing score. But for the most part, it's not an annual or you know, every other year type of test.
Right. Perhaps, you know, once a decade or so, or maybe 5 or 8 years, just to see how they're doing. You know, are we slowing the progression?
Yeah. You advocate, you know, 5 years later, you know, things might have changed. It's probably worth taking another
look. Okay.
And I
think it's really an interesting way to evaluate the progress or the success of a concerted program that may include statins, may not include statins, depending on, you know, the severity of the condition or the patient's tolerance of statins or their desires, along with nutraceuticals, along with diet, along with lifestyles, to see, you know, get a reality check. Like, is it working?
Right, right. No, absolutely. And it certainly helps monitor progress with heart disease as well.
And I think a point to be made is that, you know, a lot of people say, well, I got a stress test, I'm fine. You know, they say I'm fine. But is it possible, you know, we both know the answer, to do a stress test, to pass it with flying colors, and yet have quite a lot of plaque and be at high risk?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And unfortunately, stress tests only look for really high-grade blockages. So you can have more moderate blockages and, you know, end up with a problem. You know, we saw President Clinton undergo 8 stress tests while he was in the White House. Every year he had a stress test. He passed them all. He was doing so well, they actually stopped his statin. They felt he was doing so well. And then, you know, he had a calcium score after he left office, showed a very high plaque score, and then within about a year ended up developing symptoms and needed bypass surgery. So clearly just, you know, the wrong test in the wrong patient.
Now, some people are concerned, perhaps rightly so, with the radiation dose associated with these tests. Is there any type of equipment or tests that they should ask for to minimize the radiation exposure? I mean, that's another reason why people shouldn't get annual tests. I mean, it's nice to know, but, like, you don't want to keep getting more and more radiation. We get enough radiation from so many imaging studies.
Right, right. Yeah, no, so I think, you know, any of the good centers now can keep the dose quite low. The electron beam is the best. But it's not very widely available. So,
right. And to speak to that issue, because sometimes I send patients for an EBT scan, the electron beam tomography, and then the hospital will do a switcheroo. They'll say, well, we'll do the CAT scan instead. And that's more radiation, right?
It is a little bit, yeah. I mean, the problem is the electron beam scans just don't exist too much anymore. General Electric deemed them obsolete a number of years ago and stopped making them. So there's not that many of them, you know, still around. There's some, but it's not, they're not as widely available. The dose of a calcium score, though, is only about 1 millisievert, which is a little more than a mammogram.
Okay.
Lower than background radiation that you would get just for doing other things. So, you know, you should be cognizant of it, but it's not a high dose in any way.
Right. And is there an insurance issue around this, because, you know, we're into the era of cost containment, and sometimes I'll send patients for these tests. The insurance company would be happy to cover a stress test or an angiogram, but they don't want to do this test.
Yeah, no, it's been remarkable. Screening tests are tough. Insurance companies do not want to pay for screening.
Although it's such a valuable test, it just seems like penny-wise, pound-foolish, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, it's been very frustrating for me to try to deal with these insurance companies and just be able to make, you know, virtually no headway despite incredible evidence of the benefits of this test.
But the cost is not that great. You know, say it's not covered by insurance. I think some of the places that we send patients to, they'll just do the test for, you know, few hundred dollars. I mean, not... In the low $100.
Yeah. It's not a dramatic cost. And, you know, if you're only going to do it once every 5 years, it's $40 a year is not too big a bite.
Right. And just in terms of the scoring, there's this guy who wrote a book called The South Beach Diet, and then I noticed that his name is on the score. Is when you get a score of 286, it says 286 Agatson units. Isn't that the same guy who wrote the South Beach Diet?
Same guy, yeah. So he first came up with the Agatson score for calcium scoring, and then later, as a preventive cardiologist, wrote the South Beach Diet.
Right. So, okay, great. So, in short, we've got some evidence that aged garlic extract is the real deal, that it's there are scientific bona fides to the cardiovascular protection that it can confer. And, certainly this conversation with you reinforces my commitment to look for patients who have cardiovascular risk and to make sure that if we spot it, if we see calcification, that they take the requisite amount of aged garlic extract. That's a product that's made by Kyolic, the company that underwrites the research. But the research performed in a major university setting. It's unbiased, and it's highly refereed and scrutinized, and it's not self-serving. It's the real deal.
Yeah, no, I think they've let us do the research independent of their own, controls, and they just... we've done them in a double-blind manner where I really feel confident about the results.
Okay. Well, excellent. I congratulate you on being part of a wave of great scientific researchers who are validating the sometimes challenged claims about vitamin supplements and nutraceuticals and applying good scientific methods to provide consumers with information about the right choices when it comes to supplements. So great work.
Yeah, no, and I have partners like Wakunaga who will actually fund some of the research as well. And I think that's been our biggest criticism, is there's just not good studies out there. And studies cost money, and they don't have the money that the statin companies have. But they've definitely put forth funding to help validate their products.
Yeah, and just incidentally, before we leave this podcast, you're a conventional cardiologist, straight arrow, well credentialed, and you work in cardiovascular imaging. What's your colleagues' take on this? I mean, do they think you've gone off the deep end a little bit in studying garlic, or do they, in the setting of UCLA in California, where supplements are popular and lifestyle is, very very accentuated, they say, hey, there's acceptance of this.
Yeah, no, I think we've seen more acceptance. When I first started doing it 10 years ago, I think it was, hard, and it was hard to publish this work. Now it's much, much easier and much more better received. We've presented it at the American Heart Association meetings and the American College of Cardiology meetings. So some of the large conferences have let us present our work as well.
Well, that's great. We're getting the word out to mainstream physicians. So what's today's Intelligent Medicine call to action? Where can people get more information? Is there a website for aged garlic extract information?
Yeah, just www.kyolic.com, and that'll have all of the scientific papers. They have about 1,000 papers on that website, along with information about the different products. But it's a very nice, comprehensive website that they can go to.
Great, yeah. It's very user-friendly, and you can get the lowdown on garlic's healing properties, not just in regard to cardiovascular benefits, but also other areas of effectiveness. So thank you very much, Dr. Matthew Buda, for joining us today, and congratulations on your pioneering research. And hey, I'm sure you're going to keep us abreast of additional research that's underway. Anything that is still under wraps, but we may have disclosures in the coming months and years?
Well, we're trying to now look at, now that we've done four studies, kind of look at the data cumulatively to look at men versus women, to look at how diabetics respond versus non-diabetics. So we're trying to dice the statins versus the non-statin group. So we're trying to look at the data now that we have four large groups in a more comprehensive way. So we should have some new data coming out in short order, and we'll keep you and your listeners informed.
Okay, great. Well, thanks very much. Once again, congratulations. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.